The July 28th, 2025 meeting of the Planning Commission for a work session is now in session. First item is called to order. Did that. Next is roll call. Bill Brannigan.
Bill's here.
I'm here. Bob Berman. Jim Hanselman. Gary East.
Here.
Braulio Escobar.
Here.
John Updike.
Here.
Robert Baer.
Here.
And Dustin. Oh. Too bad. Okay. Unfinished business. City Center Design Review District, form-based code concepts. And I'll just turn it right over to Jim.
I'm going to take over for Jim, actually.
Well, that's the way you're going to be. We're used to hearing from Jim, though.
Jim, Marcy.
Yeah, I'm in charge of the form-based code here. So Marcy McAnally with HerbsWorks and part of the DEA team. So my goal here today is to walk you through the form-based code packet that you've received. And my presentation slides here will kind of give you a page number that you can go to in the packet so we can go through it together. I want to orient you to the packet because there is a lot of material there. We're going to start with why are we doing it this way? Why are we using a form-based code for the code approach, the land use code? So a little bit of overview of the approach and then walk through the form-based code document itself, ending with Newport Municipal Code amendments, which are track change amendments that are at the end of the packet, actually in part two. And then return to these discussion questions that I framed up for you to focus on, although I'm sure you're going to have lots of other questions too. All right, so yeah, I'm going to give you a preview of the discussion questions so you can keep them in mind as we go through the rest of the document. The discussion questions are on page 6 of your packet, so if we could just start there. One of the questions that I have for you is, just have to move your headshots over to the other side. There's a retail-ready frontage standard, which is an extra set of development and design standards that apply just to the traditional downtown subzone, which is the area where the couplet will be. And this is a really important area. It's kind of the most important area of all of the CCARP area. So it's where all of the regulations apply on top of each other.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm getting a little confused between the two documents. Didn't you say page 6?
Yeah, discussion questions are on page 6.
Is that in the full packet, or?
Yeah, I think you might as well just keep to the full packet while I go through this.
Okay.
All slideshow right. With.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Page 6 looks like this. There's several questions in a row on the multiple pages, and I'm going to go through each one right now.
Page 6, discussion. Okay.
Are you with me?
Is everybody okay?
Yep.
It's just okay. Me, I guess. All right.
Right. Everyone online okay?
Yep.
All right, thank you. So the regulating plan, which is kind of like a zoning plan, but it's more complicated because it has street standards and development standards in it, but they're mapped. They show exactly where different types of regulations apply. And the regulating plan shows what we call a retail-ready frontage on important streets facing 101 and facing 9th right now. The retail-ready frontage is a requirement for an extra height of the ground floor and a minimum depth, and this is to accommodate retail over time, retail and restaurant uses, to make sure that when a building in this area is built, that while it might not have active retail right away, it's built in a way that can accommodate retail later. So retail is really important for this area of the downtown, the traditional downtown. So we want retail at some point, if not right away. Now, the question that I have for you are a couple of options. They would be different than the way we show it on the regulating plan. We'll look at the regulating plan together in a moment, but I just want you to hold this question in your mind. So one option would be to have the retail-ready frontage standard only apply on side streets. This is option number one. And those are the side streets that have much more parking. They have angled parking, actually, and one of them is a festival street design. And so these are likely to be much more successful in the near term for retail. And we could apply the retail-ready frontage standard only to those side streets. Option two would be to apply them to 101 only and the side streets. So right now, the option is another option altogether. It's all the 9th and 101. So when we get to the regulating plan, we'll talk about this more.
Hey, Marcy, Bill Brannigan, question. For existing buildings, if they do a renovation, would they need to adjust to the proposed form with the higher inside ceilings and all?
No, this would only apply to new buildings.
Only new. Okay, thank you.
Sure. Right, the next question to hold in your minds while we go through this is about encroachments. We have actually built into some of the requirements that there are canopies and awnings over doorways, for example, weather protection as a required element to design of new buildings. And these will stick out into the right-of-way, obviously. And what we've said is they can encroach into the right-of-way a maximum of 3 feet. If someone wanted to build a bigger marquee, they would need to pull the building back. Currently, the way it's set up, they would need to build, if say they wanted a 6-foot deep marquee over a theater entrance or something, they would need to pull the building back 3 feet so they could encroach 3 more feet and have their 6 feet. But these are some more detailed issues about encroachments that we kind of need to work out with the right-of-way design, but I wanted to plant this issue in front of you so that we can resolve it. Any questions about that at this point? And then the last question is architectural features. Let me make sure that is the last question. Yes. So you have some quite well-defined architectural features in the Nye Beach Historical Design District already, things like that we refer to in the traditional downtown for the CCARP, we refer to things like balconies, bay windows, turrets, and you already have these in your Newport Design Review District. And so a question is, could we cross-reference to those? Would that make it easier to administer some of this, or should we come up with a more generic listing and description of these for this design district?
You did mean Nye Beach Design Review, not Newport, right?
I do mean Nye Beach, yes. The Nye Beach Design Historic Design District. All right, so now we're going to go into walking through the document. And this section that I'm talking about is on... Do these page numbers correspond? I'm sorry, I thought I was corresponding to the packet numbers.
They correspond to...
Okay. So what we're doing is creating a design review district. So it's going to be called the City Center Design Review District Form-Based Code, which will apply to the area of the regulating plan, which corresponds to the CCARP that has always been the study area for this project. Why are we using a form-based code? Because a form-based code goes above and beyond land use. Land use is actually not that important here. We're not touching the land uses. We have four or five different land uses districts in this area. It's a patchwork of one residential zone, public building zone, and two commercial zones. And we're not changing any of the allowed land uses, but we're placing over it, in essence, an overlay. I'm sure you're familiar with overlays, but the overlays apply to the shape of the buildings and their orientation to the street. And they also, in this case, apply to the street standards and the streetscape design, because that's such an important part of successful implementation of this plan. The street and the buildings work very, very closely together. That's why we have a whole section of the form-based code that's devoted to the street cross-sections.
Can I ask a question here? The design-based standards and the overlay includes some R1 and R2, I think. So are these standards intended to apply to those standalone residential properties?
Certain standards are, and I'm going to walk you through how the layering works. Very modest standards would apply to the residential areas.
Okay.
All right, so yeah, let's talk about how things apply. Applicability occurs, the applicability of the different components of the form-based code occurs kind of, if you could think of four layers, one on top of each other, each applying to a more micro-scaled area. So first we have the public realm standards, which apply to Highway 20 and Highway 101, and a portion of 101 that runs south of the couplet, so as shown in this diagram on the upper left. Then we have a general standard zone, which applies to the entire CCDRD or CCARP zone. And these are some basic standards that have that have requirements for the facade, like a certain amount of transparency, garages not in front of the facade, and certain things that would be more applicable, say, to a residential building in the outer area of the study area. Then on top of that, we have some frontage types that apply to the Highway 20 gateway zone and the Highway 101 gateway zone. And these have more to do with how the landscaping treatment at the edge of the lot works. There are a couple of different options for how a development can face the street. And it's what we're hoping for here is more consistent enclosure of parking lots and landscaping, low walls, fences, and pedestrian improvements that get you from the sidewalk to the building, which may be very far away, say as in the case of the hospital, you might have to walk through a parking lot. But the goal is to front the street with a certain sense of enclosure and landscaped, some quality frontage. Then the last layer that applies only applies to the traditional downtown zone, which is just the couplet zone. And these are where these additional frontage types apply. This is where that retail-ready storefront design would apply, only in this area. So one of you was asking if the, I think maybe the frontage types or the retail-ready would apply to residential. No, it would only apply to the streets that are marked in this plan here on the right. So if I could go through this in a little bit more detail, here's a regulating plan for the Highway 20 gateway zone.
I hate to keep interrupting, but I just have a tendency to for things to jump out. What's the difference between Section 05 and Section 5?
Probably nothing. Is there a difference? Probably nothing.
All right.
We're looking at the Highway 20 gateway zone, and the green line there is the only, besides the streetscape standards represented by the blue line, these are the cross sections will tell us what each component of the street and the streetscape must be. Other than that, only landscape frontage applies to this area. And that's same for the Highway 101 gateway zone. Landscape frontage is required for development sites where they abut the street, and the street itself has to meet certain cross-section requirements. Then when we get into the traditional downtown zone, we have the kind of maximum number of layers applying because this is the most important area that we're trying to completely transform. So it's more like a historic or more like a traditional downtown. So this is where the couplet is in effect. We'll have much narrower roadway and much more sidewalk, street tree planting, and even a bike, a protected bike lane on 101. And I think 9th has the bike lane too, yes. But 101, I think, is really going to be kind of the jewel street. So we have a retail-ready frontage requirement. It's the purple line with the darker edge to it. And if you can see this on the map, you'll see that right now the retail-ready frontage requirement only applies at the corners, but it applies to the corners of Alder, Herbert, Lee, and Angle, where they meet both Southwest 9th and Highway 101. It's kind of the maximum placement for a retail-ready frontage requirement. And what I'm asking you is to consider whether we should be reducing that, the location of that retail-ready, to maybe more important areas like just the side streets or just the corners of 101 and the side streets or some other variation of that. This will probably make more sense when we talk about the frontage requirements.
Remind us what we're looking at so we have the dimensions. So is the intent that that's 25 feet from the corner? How far does this retail ready ramp?
25 feet or to the lot line, whichever is longer. To the lot line. So if there's a lot that's a little bit longer than 25 feet, it would go to the edge of the lot.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions right now?
Right. Marcy, just to be clear, the operative about the retail-ready frontage, whether or not to have it cover all of that or not, one of the bigger pieces there is that if an area does not carry that designation, you could have residential on that first floor, right?
Yes.
So that's probably the biggest, in my mind, the biggest consideration there.
Exactly. Yeah, good point.
Is how much of that do we want to reserve for commercial on the first floor?
This map is an awful lot of retail. I'd be especially surprised to see retail like off of 9th toward 10th. That would be tough retail. Not going to have a lot of pedestrian.
And we had
traffic. Talked
about that potentially pulling that off the south side of 9th as a requirement.
And the focus being between the couplet rather than outside of the couplet, right?
Yeah.
But isn't that just the designation being the first lot on the corner and however far it goes on those cross streets? We're talking about a single lot on the corner. So doesn't this wrap around represent just the other side of that lot?
Right now, yes. There's a few different ways you could go. You could require it for the full length of, say, let's just take Alder Street, because that's one of the streets that we've identified for that festival. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it's appropriate that that purple line, the required retail frontage, extends all the way from 101 to 9th on the entire length of Alder, both sides. Maybe that's an important area where you would like to have retail required. Maybe not just at the corners. So we could pull it the whole entire length of a block face. We could reserve it just to the corners. We could take it off of 9th entirely. So these are all options.
Okay, but when we cross the 9th going on this map south, anything we do would only apply to the first lot.
Correct.
Which is the corner lot.
Yes.
Okay. And we have to decide whether we want to include the little gaps in the purple.
Exactly.
In between 101. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Well, it strikes me if we're going to implement and construct festival streets, we probably want to require retail on the first floor there to take advantage of that investment. But I don't know, I'd be curious what your thoughts are. So that'd be the interior, like on, say, Lee, for example. No, it's a tricky one.
We'll come back to this question. And
really, the impact, as Derek said, is really just the height of the first floor. Still could be residential.
Yes, it's about the height of the first floor, yeah. I mean, we're asking for 18 feet right now. That's kind of substantially different than what you would have if, say, you were just going to have an office or a residential ground floor. Can we talk about the streets now for a moment? So the next section is the public realm standards, and these are where the street cross-sections are illustrated. This table is kind of a translation between the blueprint for the ODOT urban blueprint standards, which go into a lot of detail about how deep a sidewalk must be and the depth of on-street parking, et cetera. The 101, for 101, those dimensions are really critical. If we don't get those right, I really don't think you're going to be successful with the retail or the residential there. I think that the buffer of the on-street parking and the street tree planting and the protected bike lane are, and the narrowness of the travel lanes are all part of transforming that street into something that's much more like a traditional downtown street. So that the dimensions that are underlined are the ones that are critical. Other things could change. And these are consistent with the ODOT urban blueprint standards. So we have ODOT's, you know, blessing to do this, and the whole couplet design is pretty much to these dimensions. So let's just look at some of them. The 101, Highway 101 southbound couplet, we're looking at the top image shows, looking north, so two travel lanes, on-street parking on both sides with a bulb out at the corners. So when we're talking about crossing that street, we only have two lanes of travel to cross, and they're travel in the same direction. So a lot easier and safer for a pedestrian to get across the street in this area. And then we have kind of the whole suite of things in the street, a buffer of on-street parking, a buffered bike lane, a row of street trees, and other street furniture like benches or bike parking, and a pretty substantial sidewalk. That's the depth of that assembly. It makes a huge difference, which is why we are also saying that some residential on the ground floor should be allowed here. I think that it's entirely possible to have residential on the ground floor. So on this example, we're showing an urban frontage shop front, which when we get to the frontage types, this will make more sense. On the left, that would be a building that's meeting that frontage requirement. And on the right, we have a residential porch stoop terrace, which requires either horizontal setback or a vertical separation so that there's some privacy for residential uses on the ground floor. And then on the bottom drawing, we're showing the northbound couplet. And it's very similar, except we don't have on-street parking, which is another consideration when we're talking about retail-ready requirements on 9th. I think on-street parking is going to make retail will be more successful with on-street parking nearby. Are there any questions?
So on-street parking is going to be parallel versus angle?
On 101, yes.
Okay.
I have to say it doesn't work that well right now.
No.
But that's, I think, because the travel lanes are narrower and you know, it's just a take your life in your hands trying to get out of your car.
That's true.
Well, the other thing we have to do if we're doing parallel parking is make sure the length of the spot accommodates pickup trucks, Newport's favorite vehicle.
It will have to be, they'll have to be long enough too that you don't have to do a lot of maneuvering to get into the parallel parking space. So these will probably be longer than for the trucks, but also for maneuvering. So someone can drive in and drive out more easily. But, you know, we'll have a bulb out at the corners, which will help channel traffic, and it might make it a little safer to get in and out of your car.
One problem I'm still having with the visuals relative to the setbacks, because these aren't these intended to be zero setback properties? And yet every visual shows this green space beyond the pedestrian buffer zone before you get to the building line. But isn't the code proposal zero setback?
No.
So how do I reconcile that?
Can I just explain how that works? When we get to the, can you see my cursor here? So this is the, as you pointed out, this is the back of the sidewalk or the property line.
Yeah.
Now this would be a frontage that's meeting the residential, the urban residential frontage type. So it's allowed to set back. In fact, it's required to set back either horizontal or set up vertically.
Yeah, John, so we're going from a code currently that does not allow residential on the main floor, has a zero setback. This would allow residential at main floor, street grade, what do you want to, but it will require a setback for certain residential types, right, Marcy?
Yes.
Not all residential types.
Yes. And by
is that where you're talking about the optionality between vertical or horizontal?
And I'm also the optionality between having a residential frontage and meeting those requirements versus on the upper left here, see this, if you can see my cursor here, here's a building that is at zero lot line. It's because it's a retail ready storefront frontage.
Okay.
And that's where the regulating plan becomes really important because it says where you have a choice and where you don't have a choice. So let's just look at what we're going to be seeing on Highway 20. Our ambitions here are more modest. We're trying to create more of a landscaped edge, say, to parking lots, and that's where the landscape frontage requirement, that's why we have the landscape frontage requirement for the gateway areas. We will likely see one of three types of landscape requirements, a short wall, a deeper landscaping. It's basically some structure there in three different flavors that you can choose to meet one of the three, but it requires some separation of the parking lot, either by vertically screening it with a fence or wall or horizontally separating it with some landscaping.
Can I ask a point of clarification? It says at the very bottom, the last paragraph, it says generally aligns with ODOT blueprint for urban design, traditional downtown CBD recommendations. What does generally mean?
That we don't have on-street parking here is the main thing. That's something that the ODOT blueprint actually requires for the traditional downtown. Now, it's possible that for Highway 20, some of the designs could change, and on-street parking might be able to find a way to build that in, but it would probably have to come out of the right of the property. And so we didn't want to show that option as the default. But on certain blocks, I could see, say, if an entire block facing Highway 20 were to redevelop, that property owner might want to pull their building back enough to get on-street parking. But it would come out of the property.
In what would be these are choices development by development. What would be the impact if these two choices were chosen by one after the other, or one alternative to the other, in a series of buildings where, you know, some of them have, well, the two choices here. alternating.
You would look down a street. Are you talking about like was the next block down has on-street parking, but this block does not have on-street parking? What would that look like? Is that your question?
No, forgetting the parking, just using the alternatives here. What if I chose to have a parking lot in front of my business, but only that far, and then the guy next door wants to put in the little wall with trees or whatever that structure is. Doesn't it get a little weird that these design elements start and stop within a block?
I've seen this occur in a lot of places, and I think any kind of buffering of parking lots, whether it changes from a landscaped hedge to a fence, I don't think it matters. What it does, though, is make the sidewalk environment much more pleasant, you know, to walk on. And it also provides an aesthetic improvement to the street.
Okay. US 20, is a little bit different. The section that was selected, which is depicted here, which is what is consistent with what the transportation system plan, the 22 plan called for, is maintaining the existing two-way traffic there. You could very well see this done as a single road resurfacing project in the future, where when that's done, you'll see the travel lanes narrowed somewhat because they're oversized, and that's how you gain the room for the green strip, and that would be a uniform project in that context.
Okay, that's Bob, what I was asking. Yeah.
To your question, though, and this gets at, you know, some of the you never know in the future kind of deal. You could have a couple blocks of property along US 20 redevelop at once, where the developer would come in with a concept to dedicate additional right-of-way and try to put in some parallel parking. And that would have to be evaluated by the city to make sure it, and ODOT, frankly, to make sure it makes sense and is workable. Mm-hmm. But that is certainly an option out there. But as it stands, the right-of-way is not wide enough to accommodate on-street parking. And so this is the section we're working with.
Any other questions on this section? Did I answer your question?
More or less.
Great. So let's talk about one of the side streets, Herbert Street. So Herbert is a collector, and we don't have ambitions of turning this into a festival street for that reason, but we do have room for diagonal parking on both sides and narrower travel lanes. And you can use some of the diagonal parking space, as we've shown here, for greenery, for trees. That could really, if you had one or two of these tree islands on this block, it would kind of transform the way that it feels. And so we have some photographs down below of a city that has used its parking space in that way. Their parking space, if you look at the left, the photo on the left, that's actually a parallel parking space, so you would have an even deeper planted area with your diagonal parking. And so this is one of the streets where should we be considering retail ready as a requirement here? Okay, let's talk about Alder and Lee, where these are local streets and we are more ambitious about a different design, a more transformational design. Like the Festival Street, where the parking is actually in the middle, we can have landscaping in there too. You could have street trees planted in between where the parking spaces end. But we also have room for street trees in between the parallel parking, say on the right, as shown. We have these tree islands that separate the parallel parking spaces from each other. And on the left side, you actually have room for a sidewalk that could accommodate street trees. So there are a lot of opportunities here for shade and trees and landscaping that's Newport specific. And the example below shows one of these festival streets and how it works with the narrower lanes separated by the plaza. And in this case, you can kind of see that the plaza has been, portion of it has been made into with planters, it's been kind of made into a plaza more than a parking area. And that's, those are all options with this design. So this is, again, a street, maybe even more so than Herbert, where you might want to consider the required retail frontage type.
Is there a similar matrix for the side streets like you have for 20 and 9th and the 101?
A similar
where you can,
matrix?
Where you can see the width of the pedestrian zone and the width of the traffic? Or did I miss that, or is that not in here?
No, we do have that information. In fact, like a question for you is, we could have these dimensions for these street sections below the drawing. If that is something, that's something that we have done for other form-based.
It'd be helpful to know what are the widths of the pedestrian zones we're looking at, because they look a little narrow. Sure. When you compare to like the photo montage shows the ability for on a cross street to have some cafe space, but I don't see that space here. So I'm just wondering, could lead to some confusion.
Any other questions about this cross section? So we're going to end on, I think this is the end of the cross section. We have a couple of alleys too, but this is south of 101. We're really not changing the street much at all, except to require the landscape frontage along the edge. Someone could still build a building up to the edge of the property line. That's always an option, but we don't. But I think that you're more likely to see landscape frontage here and parking lots and then buildings behind. But the landscape frontage will still provide a lot of improvement. Any questions on this one?
So we have no parking down there either on the street.
Follow up on my colleague's question before. So in this narrative where it states about not aligning with ODOT's blueprint for urban, that's okay?
Yeah,
ODOT does
not
have a problem with that, right?
Yeah, let me explain this a little bit. The ODOT blueprint, those are guidelines of what is in the realm of permissible. If the state signs off on this, doesn't contest this, is agreeable to this, then this is what we're going with, and ODOT's signing off as part of this process.
Okay.
So.
They have to for state. Mm-hmm. State highway, they have to.
So this is within the sidebars of what the blueprint calls for, and Okay. They've been active. David Helton, you've seen him at the meetings. That's the ODOT liaison who is our partner in this process. He's well-versed in all these materials. Couldn't attend the meeting tonight because of a conflict. They're on board with this package.
Okay.
We do also have a couple of alley sections because we've been talking about all throughout the project having through block connections and mid block access. So these dimensions, when we add the dimensions to these drawings, as we will do based on what we just talked about, we'll have a maximum dimension for these alley widths so that they're traffic calming widths. And then we'll set the standard for landscaping edged where we need to have that type of alley. So this drawing will probably specify which alley is allowed where. Okay, so the next section that I want to go over is the longest section really of the packet, and it's the development and design standards. And start on page 30. I'm not sure which page it does start on, but it's there. I want to explain there are three different pieces to this chapter. One is the development standards, which are lot size width, setbacks, lot coverage, building height, and maximum density. Then there's a section that goes through the clear and objective design standards for street-facing building facades or facades that face other public spaces. And these are your basic design standards that make sure we have enough transparency, eyes on the street, primary entrance is visible from the street. These are quite common, especially if you've been through the middle housing code amendments. These are basically those. And lastly, we have the frontage types. So the clear and objective standards, that middle bullet that I'm talking about, that applies to the whole area. But then if you're in the traditional downtown subzone, the frontage types apply in addition. This making some sense about how the layering of additional detail applies to more specialized areas.
And as you know, we have to provide clear and objective path approval for residential. One of the questions Marcy has, and this seems like a reasonable time to touch on this, is do we want to provide a discretionary process as an outlet? We do that in NIBH, where if somebody says, I can achieve the objectives of what we're, you know, you're trying to accomplish here, but I can do it in a different way than I, and I'd like to demonstrate to you that I can do that, as opposed to follow all of the clear and objective standards as outlined.
But isn't that always available regardless?
Right now, it's not crafted in here. And that was one of her questions, was do you want, a discretionary outlet, you know, where you have guidelines that they have to meet and it goes before you as a planning commission because they're choosing not to meet the clear and objective standards.
But if you have clear and objective standards, they can always come to us for a variance or an adjustment.
A variance.
True. I think the guideline approach was really to take a look at that in a more comprehensive way. They can always with individual standards seek an adjustment or a variance. Where I'm struggling with it on that is, if somebody's proposing something, I mean, I get it if it's just like, okay, we can't meet this specific clear and objective standard.
Right.
But if they're proposing something that's deviating, say, you know, in a meaningful way from a number of those standards, you probably want to look at it holistically than as each, okay, a little adjustment here, adjustment there, adjustment there.
To give developers that are coming in as many options as possible. I mean, just to get some incentive for them to come in. If you make the rules too strict, they might look at that and say, this is just something we just aren't interested in doing.
So what exactly is the choice here? The decision that...
Well, you have a set of clear and objective standards.
Right.
That would be implemented by our office. You won't see those projects. If somebody doesn't want to meet the clear and objective standards but believes that their project is consistent with what we're trying to do in the, say, the commercial core area or along US 20, wherever it is, they would have an alternative process with discretionary guidelines that then goes before the planning commission. They can argue how their alternative approach is consistent with achieving the objectives of what the city's trying to do in that particular area. You always have the adjustment processes for specific dimensional standards.
Well, it would still result in a variance in a way, right?
It would, but it would be in those cases, if they're going the discretionary route, they're likely deviating, you want to call it a variance, to multiple standards, not just one, like a side yard setback or height adjustment or something like that.
Okay. We've tried to build a lot of choices into this system, the form-based code system. You have choices about which frontage type, in many cases, which frontage type you use, how you meet each of the clear and objective design standards for street-facing building facades that apply everywhere. Still, it's a menu of options. So there are choices built into the system. But I suppose that someone might just want total creative freedom, you know, and that would be where you might want to have a design guidelines and an intent statement, and then you, through a discretionary process, you determine whether the applicant has met those.
Understand, applicants are reluctant to go through discretionary processes. They don't care for those because that's uncertainty. You don't see them very often. I think in Night Beach, the last one you had was the Inn at Night Beach expansion was brought forward as a discretionary review. But it's not common.
Okay, so moving on. These are the development standards. They are almost unchanged from what you currently have for the C1 and C3 and P1 zones. We've added roof slopes shall be between, that's the bottom line there, between 5 and 12 and 12 and 12, except for shed roof. Additions or shed dormers may be 3 and 12. So that's an addition to for this area. Any concerns or questions about this? Then, so the general standards that I want to just give you a summary of, we won't go through all of them, but these are that they apply to all the street-facing facades or facades facing a public space. And they are, as I mentioned, if you're familiar with the middle housing, they are almost verbatim to what those require. Articulation, eyes on the street, main entrance, detailed design. They apply in different ways. Most of them apply to dwellings facing the street when the closest wall of the street-facing facade is within 50 feet of a front or street side lot line, or to dwellings in a cluster or grouping, or in the case of transitional space, which is about creating that those layers of privacy where you have ground floor retail, they apply, as stated here, applicable to ground floor dwellings with access from the street or shared open space, and access entry door is within 10 feet of the street-facing property line or within the front yard setback or within 10 feet of shared open space or common tractor easement. So those would apply to all those buildings that are outside of the traditional downtown area. But that's how we ensure that there's a consistent level of design quality for the development within the CCDRD area. There are also pedestrian circulation requirements so that we maintain some basic access to the front doors, from the sidewalk to the front doors, and off-street parking where there are parking spaces of 5 or more. This section goes on for some number of pages, and I didn't want to go over all of it right here. I just wanted to give you a highlight of what that section contains. Do you have any questions about this section?
And Marcy?
Yes.
I read someplace where the roof needed to be either like wood shake or tile.
Yes. That might be true. So that means
asphalt shingles is out, or a metal roof is out?
We can add to the roof types, the roof material types. Would that be a specific suggestion of yours?
Yeah, that would be my suggestion. I'm not sure that how tile stands up in this climate, Wood shake does, as long as it's cedar, but I mean, I would think an awful lot of businesses would probably be trying to opt for, you know, asphalt shingles. Although, if the building is flat-topped, then they need to put down a non-permeable membrane.
And I just mentioned the sloped roof requirement that's intended to make that membrane roof material not applicable.
You know, Bill, you bring up a good point. One thing I haven't had a chance to do, given just timing, but we can do between work sessions, is run this by our building official, and, you know, just for coastal climate type considerations, see if he has any suggestions or recommendations for kind of tweaking the list, so to speak.
Do you have roof materials listing in Nye Beach?
You know, I don't know that we do. I think we have, no, I don't recall that for Nye Beach. Roof pitch, exterior siding specs, but I'm not recalling that we have specific roofing material recommendations in Nye Beach. I'll have to check.
The tile roofs, they really add a lot for the construction. The costs are extremely high. And I know one of the communities that I managed, we had a regulation where one development had to have all tile roofs. And then, it was expensive. And then we changed that to allow them to have metal roofs. Made a big difference. And that was a good point that Bill brought up.
Yes, very good. We want to make sure that all the material, there's another materials menu, I think, maybe.
Yep, there is.
And we want to make sure that those are really appropriate for Newport. So I like the suggestion that we take it to the building official.
Yep. And since I know we're getting a little bit down on time, but my suggestion with respect to the listing of detailed design elements is go with something that's generic for City Center, not borrow from Nye Beach, because Nye Beach is so specific to the design concepts that we're trying to accomplish in Nye Beach. And City Center really hasn't had that conversation yet, whether or not there is going to be a design motif, whether or not there's a desire to continue with some sort of deco theme or not, that we probably want to be fairly generic in terms of the design elements at this juncture.
Well, we're lacking our building expert who resigned from the board a year or so ago, and we're missing our advisor, architecturally speaking. And this program talks repeatedly about affordability of housing and a range of affordability. And some of these concepts that you're including, like tile roofs, detract from the ability for affordability. And so if you are really true to the concept of a range of affordability, then your recommendations need to get on the same page with building materials so that we have a chance at creating some workforce housing. I mean, it's been nice to look at the drawings to see that most apartments would be 700 square feet. Even the condos would be 1,000, maybe 1,100. And of course that can keep cost of buildings down and reduce the cost of building. But I foresee prices only increasing for supplies and labor. So I think to limit our building materials list is wrong-headed. My 2 cents worth.
Good point. We'll make sure that
we need to tailor this for all ranges of affordability. We don't need to price people out of it before the first block is laid. Pardon?
I can I concur with the comments of the fellow commissioners on the building materials. Before our work session ends, could you expand on this concept of off-street parking in your slide, the last slide that you put up? It says it's applicable to cluster parking where parking spaces are five or more. Could you expand on that concept, please?
Yes. It's in the... So it talks about off-street parking may be arranged in clusters subject to the following standards. Cottage cluster projects with fewer than 16 cottages are permitted. Parking clusters of not more than five contiguous spaces and larger cottage clusters not more than eight. Parking clusters must be separated from other spaces by at least 4 feet of landscaping. Clustered parking areas may be covered. Off-street parking spaces and vehicle maneuvering areas must not be located within 20 feet from any property line, street property line, except alley property lines. Between a street property line and front facade of cottages located closest to the street property line.
Is the concept designed to eliminate a requirement of off-street parking for a dwelling unit?
Was that a question?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Can you just repeat the first part of your question?
My question is your concept designed to, in certain instances, eliminate a requirement that a dwelling have an off-street parking space?
So I don't think, because when I first read this, I got confused too. And then I read it like three times, and then it started to sink in. I think the idea is not to limit the parking. It's to limit the aggregation of parking in a sea of asphalt so that it's broken up, right, with landscaping. So we're not addressing parking limitations. We're just addressing the grouping. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
Okay.
Marcy, is that your understanding?
Yes. This is not about the parking requirement.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? So we're coming to the end of this work session, and we'll have to continue this, right, mm-hmm. Derek?
Yeah, I anticipated this is a lot of material to chug through, and so I anticipated you'd need more than one work session. Marcy was kind enough to be able to make it in person for this one. The next work session where we pick this back up again would be August 12th, I believe. It's that second Monday, and then, 11th. I was close. August 11th, and Marcy will be able to participate via video conference, and we can chug through the balance of it on the 12th, or 11th. Man, I did that twice. 11th of August.
Okay, I think we'll have to call work session here. We do have to move on to our regular session. At 7, thank you very much
for coming
on down.
Yes.
You got lucky with the weather. Hope you enjoyed your visit here.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Derek, we're going to move on. Any new business, specifically the work program update? You want to? Any specific notes on that?
No, I don't have anything specific to discuss there.
Okay. Then we will close the work session. And Sherry will get ready to start the regular session.